Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Residents Heading into Uncharted Territory by Ruth Campbell. R-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at OAOA.com. A lot of things have been different for people since the coronavirus pandemic took hold. That includes for residents at the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center School of Medicine in Odessa, who were counting on having a match day followed by a celebration with friends and family. Instead of being in person, it was held virtually March 20th. There were 22 students in the Permian Basin who matched this year, and they had 100% matching rate across all the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center campuses, said Emily Holiva in the Communications and Marketing Office of TTUHSC in Odessa. Now, Michelle Grunstrom, Diana Mitchell, Quang Nguyen will be heading off this summer to their matches in uncharted waters. Grunstrom was matched to the Obstetrics and Gynecology program in Odessa, while Diana Mitchell and Nguyen were matched to Case Western Metro Health for OBGYN and Case Western Reserve University in neurosurgery, respectively. It was definitely unexpected, Nguyen said of the virtual match day. It was kind of hard to deal with at first, because his family had bought tickets to come to Odessa from Ohio. As the event got closer, they accepted it and video conferenced everybody in who was going to participate and added a few more in. It definitely wasn't what I had been anticipating in the weeks leading up to it. We bought cute, nice match day outfits that I still need to return, Mitchell said. In the end, though, it seemed a bit more intimate, and having her partner Nguyen on hand was nice as well. I was happy in the end, but definitely wish I could have celebrated with my classmates, Mitchell said. Grunstrom agreed with Mitchell. For me, I matched to the program here, so all the residents, all the doctors that I worked with who wrote me letters, who were hoping that I ended up with them, it would have been special to be with them when we all found out. This way, I got to find out with my roommate and my family, Grunstrom said. All were happy with their matches. Mitchell said she and Nguyen would have liked to be near family in Utah for her and Houston for him, but Cleveland has a great program. Mitchell said she spent a month there and loved it. I agree with Diana. We are both extremely happy. When I interviewed there, I really liked the program, Nguyen said. All three said they loved the program at Texas Tech in Odessa. Nguyen said he would pick the Permian Basin all over again. All three of us have gotten to work with the residents and attendings over the past 2 years. They know me well, and I know them well. I'm excited to stay with people I know I like, said Grunstrom, who is originally from Dallas. The residents also are excited and apprehensive about starting their careers out now. Most of us got into healthcare wanting to help people that need our help, attention, and expertise, but at the same time, wanting to get right in on the action, and if we want to be able to serve our fellow man for many years to come, it is important to be able to protect ourselves so we can continue the work, Mitchell said. Nguyen said this is a learning opportunity that they wouldn't get at another time. There's a great need for us, he said. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, April 2nd, 2020. Local news. Murray, teaching continues via remote learning. By Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. Now that Governor Greg Abbott has ordered schools closed statewide at least through May 4th, Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray said He knows this will create a variety of emotions in students and families. However, he said, learning will go on. I'm sure that we just accelerated the level of stress that many of our families are feeling with that announcement Tuesday. We recognize that the kids, especially our seniors, their stress and anxiety I'm sure skyrocketed today as they thought about their senior year and the things that they may miss, Murray said. He noted that the teachers will have to continue with remote learning. Grab-and-go meals will continue to be served, but business will be done in a very different way. I think the big message that I would like for our community to hear is that we are doing this journey together. We are in this body of work, and we are having this experience as a community, and we will partner with our parents and our students as we grow and learn every single day, he added. Murray said, this is difficult for everyone, and everyone will be better for it. But right now, the stress and anxiety and the challenges that we're all facing are something that we must face together. And each day that we do this remote learning will be better and better and better. The feedback that we're getting from parents has been incredibly helpful. We've made quite a few adjustments based on that feedback, so we would like that to continue. We want to continue to get feedback from moms and dads and kids so that we can make this a better experience, because clearly we're going to be doing this for a while and we need it to be really good for our kids and families, Murray said. The goal is to continue to improve, although it seems longer. Murray said, this is week two of serving meals and educating students remotely. A support line for counseling and a help desk for technical issues have been set up. Meanwhile, the district, along with those statewide, is receiving guidance from the state and federal government that continues to change. We fully expect changes and hopefully improvements as we take this journey together, Murray said. District personnel will continue to be paid as long as school is going. Additionally, the year will not be extended past Memorial Day weekend. If we stop teaching, then that's when our decision would have to be different, but we are having school. Our teachers are teaching, albeit very differently. Our cafeteria folks are serving meals. Our administrators are supporting teachers and communicating, Murray said. So we are closed to the public, if you will, but we are open for business, he added. Learning will continue throughout the summer, he said. One of the things, in fact, that we're working on today, Tuesday, is we're looking at creating some pretty unique learning experiences for kids this summer, knowing that we will not be able to be together. Knowing that social distance will still probably be the norm this summer, how can we create learning experiences for kids that last the 2.5 to 3 months of summer? We're working on those plans right now because we do want learning to happen this summer. It may not be the typical school environment, but we want learning to continue. Scott Murray.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read additional stories for Thursday, April 2nd, 2020. These are going to be Texas and national stories, and we'll start with articles from the Midland Reporter Telegram's edition today. Saudi Arabia resists Trump's attempt to broker oil war truce, by Javier Blas and Evgenia Pizmenya, Bloomberg. Donald Trump attempted to contact Saudi Arabia to dial back its oil price war with Russia. Instead, the kingdom pushed crude supply to record levels. Trump said Tuesday night that he had spoken to both President Vladimir Putin and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in an effort to broker a truce between the world's two largest oil exporters. Saudi Arabia started the month by boosting supply to more than 12 million barrels a day, the largest on record, according to an industry official familiar with the kingdom's operations. Aramco declined to comment. So far, Riyadh has insisted that it will only back away from a decision to flood the global market if all the world's leading producers, including the U.S., agree to cut output. Russia has struck a more conciliatory tone, saying it would hold back from a major production increase, but hasn't offered any concrete proposals to end hostilities with its former OPEC Plus ally. Trump's decision to wade into oil diplomacy is driven by the catastrophic impact of the oil price crash on the American shale industry, largely based in Texas and other Republican-leaning states. But his mission to rein in global supply is overshadowed by the unprecedented loss of demand, possibly as much as 30%, caused by the fight against the coronavirus. Signs of policy discussions are multiplying, and we believe such an outcome should no longer be dismissed, analysts at Goldman Sachs said in a note. Even so, after such a huge drop in consumption, it's questionable whether policy coordination by OPEC Plus, the U.S., and oil producers more broadly can save this market. A senior Russian official said that while they hadn't spoken to Saudi Arabia yet, Moscow had no plans to increase production given the current market situation. He gave no indication that Russia was willing to consider output cuts, however. It was Russia's refusal to join Saudi Arabia and other members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries in deeper reductions that kicked off the price war in early March. The Russian side traditionally welcomes mutual dialogue and cooperation in order to stabilize energy markets, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters on a conference call Tuesday. Putin has no immediate plans to speak with the Saudi king or crown prince, but such contacts can be easily arranged, he said. World oil demand, normally around 100 million barrels a day, will likely be down by 30 million barrels a day in April and has yet to bottom out as lockdowns due to the virus continue. Chris Bake, an executive committee member at Trader Vital, said on Tuesday. The Russian officials said it made no sense for producers to boost output in the current situation. Energy Minister Alexander Novak said last month that the country can raise production by 200,000 to 300,000 barrels a day in the short term and by as much as 500,000 barrels a day in the near future. That's a fraction of the additional 2 million barrels a day that Saudi Arabia has pledged to pump. The sharp drop of oil prices has made the bulk of new Russian oil drilling uneconomic. The industry will need to look for ways to optimize output, said Daria Kozlova, head of oil and gas regulation services at Moscow-based Vigon Consulting. However, even if production is flat, Russia may hike its oil exports to offset falling domestic demand for crude as its own economy goes into shutdown to slow the spread of the coronavirus, Kozlova said. On Tuesday evening in Washington, Trump said the U.S. would meet with Saudi Arabia and Russia with the goal of staunching the historic plunge in oil prices and has raised the issue directly with countries' rulers. They're going to get together, and we're all going to get together, and we're going to see what we can do, he said. The two countries are discussing it, and I am joining at the appropriate time if need be. U.S. Energy Secretary Dan Brugliette had a productive discussion with Novak on Tuesday and agreed to continue dialogue among major energy producers and consumers, including through the G20, the Department of Energy said in a statement. The two men agreed that an oil oversupply hurts the global economy, the Russian energy ministry said separately. Neither side detailed any steps they are considering to stem the downturn. And now here is an Associated Press article that was published in today's Odessa American. Why health experts aren't warning people about coronavirus in food. New York. Chicken with salmonella can make you sick. So can romaine lettuce with E. coli and buffets with lurking norovirus. So why aren't health officials warning people about eating contaminated food with the new coronavirus? The answer has to do with the varying paths organisms take to make people sick. Respiratory viruses, like the new coronavirus, generally attach to cells in places like the lungs. Germs like norovirus and salmonella can survive the acid in stomachs, then multiply after attacking the cells inside people's guts. Specializing in what tissues to attach to is typically part of the disease's strategy to cause illness, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The CDC and other experts note that the virus is new and still being studied, but they say there's no evidence yet that COVID-19 sickens people through their digestive systems, though the virus has been detected in the feces of infected people. How these germs spread also differs. Respiratory viruses like the flu and the new coronavirus spread mainly through person-to-person contact and air droplets from coughing, sneezing, or other flying saliva. Germs that make people sick through food cause symptoms like diarrhea. In some cases, germs in the feces can capitalize on poor hygiene to jump from people's hands to whatever else they touch. That's why it's so important for food workers to stay home when they are sick with digestive illnesses. There's a big risk the restaurant could end up sickening lots of people. When it comes to food and COVID-19, experts say the biggest risk is contact in grocery stores with other customers and employees, rather than anything you eat. It's why stores are limiting the number of people they let in, asking customers to practice social distancing and using tape to mark how far apart people should stand. The new virus can survive on some surfaces, so experts say to keep your hands to yourself as much as possible and to avoid touching your face when shopping. After unpacking your groceries at home, the CDC suggests washing your hands. It may be harder for viruses to survive on food itself. It's a porous surface. The chances of anything surviving or coming out of it are small, said Allison Stout, an expert in infectious diseases and public health at Cornell University. As for the coronavirus being found in the stool of infected people, the CDC notes that it's not known whether the germs found there can actually sicken someone. Stout said the presence of the virus in the stool is more likely a reflection of systemic infection, rather than its ability to survive the digestive tract. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram opinion page, Thursday, April 2nd. MRT Opinion Extra. Summer school makes sense under certain conditions. Midland ISD superintendent said Tuesday, the district is considering a summer learning environment that helps students prepare for the 2021 school year. There weren't many specifics offered because there are things that need to be worked out. But let me make one request of Midland ISD as it considers what summer school might look like. Be bold. If the district is going to do something as unpopular, but potentially important to our community as summer school could be, don't go halfway. Go full throttle. Here's my plan. Public school students should be brought back in July, assuming health conditions allow, for a month of remedial education to catch them up for what they missed at the end of the 2019-20 school year and to give them a head start going into 2020-21. It actually was after a conversation with my sister, who is a teacher in Bryan College Station, that the idea made sense to me. She worries about her students' inability to perform upon promotion to the next grade. It is easy to understand why she worries. What also makes sense, and because we are talking about a revolutionary plan for education in Midland, is that Governor Greg Abbott work with those districts making similar educational improvement plans. Abbott should put forth the following order. School districts that go about such transformative measures during the summer will not have to test for accountability purposes in 2020-21. The students would be tested, but only to see at what level they are achieving. this information would be shared with parents, similarly to testing that takes place in private schools across the nation. Any plan involving summer school also should call for delaying the start of the 2020-21 school to the last week of August or first week in September. This would allow families plenty of time to take vacation. As unpopular as this idea will be to students, parents, and probably teachers, there are two reasons why our community must insist that it happens. First, it's likely that asking 26,000 students to participate in an online classroom will put them behind where they are expected to be. I also believe students would start the 2020-21 school year in a deficit. That hole will only get worse as the year continues. MISD, if not the state, must have a plan to avoid such a deficit. There must be a period of education that would be as extraordinary as what we are experiencing now. Second, we have been told by MISD leaders that adult convenience or preference can't take priority over the academic progress of our students. Let's see to what extent they and the rest of us believe their words. Here is the academic plan. Half days of school during the month of July. Classes will be limited to English, math, and science, or similar classes depending on the grade level. School starts at 9 a.m. and ends at noon. Kids are in the pool by 1:30 p.m. This summer session is about academics, with teachers making up the curriculum. Star testing won't matter, neither will goal progress measures. Teachers are responsible for making this month matter. If someone wants to look at this summer session as punishment, there isn't anything that can be done about it. However, our community and beyond face a pretty big obstacle. What students will not learn during the last 3 months of the academic year could result in them playing catch-up for years. And as we hear experts often say, once you lose a kid, it becomes very difficult to get them back. So let's get them caught up, allow our teachers to teach, and put a stamp on the type of education system that makes sense for Midland. Column by Stuart Doreen.
Guest view. Congress is providing serious relief for families, small businesses. The rapid spread of the novel coronavirus has taken a tremendous toll on the physical and financial health of the American people. As the number of cases has soared, medical professionals and leaders at every level have made a single critical request: stay home. Social distancing is key to flattening the curve to avoid overwhelming our healthcare system. While it's the most important thing Texans can do right now, that doesn't mean this shift in our daily routines is without consequence. Small businesses and schools have closed their doors, restaurants have switched to takeout-only operations, and families have canceled travel plans. As a result, millions of workers have lost their jobs, and our economic engine has slowed to a sputter. Think about the waiter at your favorite Tex-Mex restaurant, the person who cuts your hair, the housekeeper who cleans rooms at a nearby hotel. A few weeks ago, each of these men and women had a reliable source of income, and today, many have either been laid off or forced to work fewer hours. Texas workers and small businesses have been burdened by this crisis at no fault of their own, and the U.S. Senate just delivered serious assistance. On Wednesday, we unanimously passed a bill which will send direct financial help to the Texans who need it. A family of four can receive up to $3,400 because of this legislation, with no piles of paperwork to sort through. It also expands unemployment insurance eligibility and provides an extra $600 a week in federal unemployment benefits. When it comes to covering bills and navigating this uncertainty, that money is a lifeline. This bill also provides serious relief for small businesses. It creates new loans to help these businesses cover everything from mortgage payments to payroll expenses, and helps ensure employees at businesses of all sizes will have the support they need now and jobs to come back to later. Of course, this bill also gets to the heart of this crisis, the virus itself. It provides $100 billion for hospitals that are struggling to manage the influx of patients, and it helps fight the shortage of critical medical devices, such as respirators. It also cuts red tape to speed up the process of making vaccines and treatments widely available, and helps get doctors and nurses to the hardest hit areas. This legislation builds on two bills President Donald Trump signed earlier this month. The first invested $8.3 billion in the early stages of our fight against the coronavirus. It provided funding for masks and other personal protective equipment for our health care professionals and first responders, and supported our community health centers and state and local health departments. It also bolstered our resources in the race to develop a vaccine, possible treatments, and more diagnostics. Shortly after that, we passed a second bill to support the workers and small businesses hit hardest by this pandemic. It improved paid sick leave for those impacted by the coronavirus, made unemployment insurance more accessible, and strengthened food security for Americans of all ages. It also made coronavirus testing free for all Americans. No one should ever be in a position of sacrificing health and safety because of cost. Amid all this uncertainty, one thing is abundantly clear. There's no time for politics as usual. Each of these bills received broad bipartisan support in both the Senate and House, and each was quickly signed by the President. I'm proud to have joined both Republicans and Democrats in swiftly passing these bills to bolster our nation's response to the coronavirus. As millions of Texans hunker down at home, there's an entire network of people who have continued working. Our incredible healthcare professionals and first responders are fighting this virus on the front lines. Farmers, ranchers, and producers are growing our food, truckers are delivering it, and store employees and food bank volunteers are stocking shelves. I'm incredibly grateful for the work these men and women are doing, day in and day out, to support their neighbors during this difficult time for our country. As this crisis continues to evolve in the days and weeks ahead, I promise to do the same. Senator John Cornyn, a Republican from Texas, is a member of the Senate Finance, Intelligence, and Judiciary Committees. U.S. Senator John Cornyn. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, April 2nd, 2020. Opinion. Texas View: people should resist desire to hoard domestic supplies. The Point: we all can help the coronavirus threat subside by helping people avoid contact with others, and that is best done by buying only what we need. It appears that the worst is over with regard to store supplies. Most people surely hope it is. Store shelves aren't as full as they once were, and some items continue to run out quickly, but more people are finding it easier to get toilet paper, water, and other necessities. Let's hope the improvement continues and the angst that caused it subsides. Widespread panic over the coronavirus led many people to buy up all the toilet paper, hand sanitizer, and other items they could find. Some did it out of fear. Others panicked upon seeing those who filled their baskets with toilet paper and decided they'd better do the same. Some people tried to prey on that fear by buying up all the basic items they could and then start selling them at inflated prices to people whose anxiety was compounded by the sight of empty store shelves. Before long, the panic buying overwhelmed retailers who didn't expect the run on basic goods and normally don't have supplies for more than a few normal days of sales. To offset the panic buying, stores shortened operating hours started controlling the flow of shoppers and imposed limits on the goods that were selling out the fastest. Social networks shut down many people who tried to use their forums to profit from the panic. The various steps, coupled with the increased output from suppliers and manufacturers, has enabled more people to find what they need, now seem to be working. Perhaps the hoarding of supplies helped some people ease their fears by allowing them to feel that they, at least, were doing something. But the hoarding never was necessary, and it only worsened the situations that health and government officials were trying to avoid. Stockpiling created a self-fulfilling situation, forcing those who hadn't hoarded to spend more time out in the streets, going from store to store and waiting in lines, looking for the items that had been gobbled up. Having to spend significant parts of their day out on such searches, even if they'd rather be safe at home, forced them to endure otherwise unnecessary exposure to other people, any one of whom might be carrying COVID-19 or any other illness. Store workers who have had to deal with the long lines of desperate shoppers were especially exposed to unnecessary risk. Coronavirus isn't the only threat right now, as most doctors have stopped taking walk-ins and new patients and are interacting with their existing patients as much as they can by phone or via internet-based video link. This makes it harder for anyone to see a doctor in his office for a non-emergency illness and raises the risk of inaccurate diagnosis that could make their problem worse. Some patients might opt to endure what they think is a simple cold or flu, allowing an infection to get worse because it wasn't diagnosed and treated earlier. We hope no one believes that having a larger cache of toilet paper is worth putting everyone else's health at risk, especially since allowing the coronavirus or any other disease to spread more easily also increases the health risks to the hoarders themselves when they leave their own homes. The coronavirus threat will subside, we all hope, sooner rather than later. We all can help that happen by helping people avoid contact with others, and that is best done by buying only what we need and leaving some for the rest, so they don't have to put their own health at risk just because they have to run all over town looking for a few rolls of toilet paper. The Brownsville Herald.
Midland Reporter Telegram, Thursday, April 2nd, 2020. Obituaries. Evelyn McCaskill Bishop. Evelyn McCaskill Bishop, 86, passed away in her home on Saturday, March 28, surrounded by family and friends, reminiscing about her remarkable life. Evelyn was born in Martin County to loving parents Earl McCaskill, former County Commissioner of Midland County, and Macy McCaskill. Evelyn is survived by two sons, Alan and wife Mary of Fredericksburg, Texas, and Joe, Jody, and significant other Amanda and her daughter Jenny of Midland, Texas. Evelyn is also survived by a sister, Olivia Sellers of Tyler, Texas, and a sister-in-law, Sandra McCaskill of Midland, Texas, and their families. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to Hospice of Midland or the West Texas Chapter of Alzheimer's Association at 4400 North Big Spring, Suite 32, Midland, Texas, 79701. Evelyn will be cremated and interned next to her parents at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland, Texas. Jerry Lynn Frizik. Jerry Lynn Teresa Dubas Frizik, 94, of St. Louis, passed away at her residence on Monday, March 30th, 2020. Due to the COVID-19 virus, we are limited to the amount of people who can attend the services. So the family is asking people to please pray a rosary at 6 p.m. on Wednesday night for her repose of her soul. Graveside services will be for immediate family only at 2 p.m. Thursday, April 2nd, 2020 at St. Lawrence Cemetery. She met and was courted by August Matthew Frizik and later married him on December 25th, 1949. Her most important and favorite job was being a mother to her 5 children, grandmother to her 9 grandchildren, and great-grandmother to her 9 great-great-children. She loved her family and especially her sisters, Alfreda, Gloria, and Genevieve. She is survived by her son, Kervin Frizik, her son and daughter-in-law, Mark and Linda Frizik, her daughter and son-in-law, Kathleen and Kenneth Schneiders, son-in-law, Warren Lang, and Carol Cruz. Geraldine is preceded in death by her parents, John and Amelia Dubis, her husband, August Frizik, her children, Teresa Jean Frizik, and Sharon Gail Frizik Lane. She is also preceded in death by her sister, Genevieve Dubas Schwartz. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial donations to the St. Lawrence Cemetery Fund in Garden City, Texas, the Glasscock County EMS Fund in Garden City, or to Safe Place of Midland. Maxine Fussell Kirkpatrick. Maxine Fussell Kirkpatrick was born January 21, 1931, in Big Springs, Texas. She was preceded in death by her parents, James Edgar and Zilla Mae Floyd Fussell, her husband, J.H. Kirkpatrick, sister Charlene Harris, and brother Eddie Dean Fussell. Survivors include son Jimmy H. Kirkpatrick, daughter-in-law Tanya Kirkpatrick, granddaughter Raven Kirkpatrick, 2 brothers Jerry Fussell, Joe Fussell, and an abundance of nieces and nephews. Maxine is currently at Ellis Funeral Home, but will be buried next to her husband this Saturday, April 4th, 2020. Due to the current government coronavirus restrictions, attendance for interment will be limited to immediate family. A celebration of her life will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, donations can be mailed to the following address in Maxine's memory: Mays Cancer Center Development Department, 7703 Floyd Curl Drive, mail code 7835, San Antonio, Texas, 78779.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, April 2nd, 2020. Obituary and death notices. Obituary. Lola Lee Williams Renfro Logston. Odessa. On Sunday, March 29th, our precious Aunt Lola danced through the gates of heaven into the arms of Jesus and her loved ones that awaited her. Lola was a one-of-the-kind soul, always ready and willing to help those in need. She cared for her sisters and parents throughout her life, and at the end of their lives, she was the constant presence for them. Her story was unique and yet the same as many of her generation. She weathered the Great Depression, World War II, and all the struggles those times held, and came through with the resilient spirit that stayed with her throughout her life. Born September 30th, 1924, Lola's family lived in Garland, Texas, and later moved to Odessa. One memory Lola had was of sneaking out of the tent in which her parents and 7 siblings lived. That spirit of mischievousness never left her, even long after she left childhood. As a young woman, Lola bought a pair of red shoes to wear on a date and found them missing when she got ready to meet her beau. She went into town to find her sister Edna and took the red shoes off of her, leaving Edna shoeless. Decades later, the two sisters laughed about this memory as they recalled the love and fun they shared throughout their lives. Lola and Doyle Renfro were married in August of 1948 and lived together until he passed in October of 1988. Theirs was a love that those who knew them envied. Lola lived to take care of Doyle, and he adored her. They loved and danced through their 40 years of marriage and were an example of love and sacrifice for all they knew. Lola married Clifford Logsdon in June of 1998, and she loved and cared for him until he passed in December 2008. They met at senior citizen dances that were held all over the Permian Basin. Lola volunteered at the Odessa Senior Center, helping out the old folks, even though she was older and yet more spry than most of those she helped. Lola was preceded in death by her parents, Jeff and Myrtis Younger Williams, siblings Helen Jackson, Laverne Lanham, Edna Woodard, Jack Williams, Maybelle Palmer, Ellie Cotton Williams, Marcia Williams, husbands Doyle Renfro and Clifford Logsdon. She leaves her nephew, Jeff Williams, and wife, Andrea, great-nephews Zachary William and pup Precious, with whom she lived for the last 8 years of her life. She blessed their lives in innumerable ways and left an indelible impression on their lives. Lola also leaves a wealth of nieces, nephews, and their families. Visitation will be at Frank Wilson Funeral Home on Thursday, April 2nd, 2020, from 4 to 8 p.m. Due to the coronavirus, visitors will not be allowed outside at these times, and numbers will be limited to 9 in the building at a time. If you wish to wait outside, please wait in your vehicles. Also, the graveside service will be private due to the limitations for gatherings. Thank you for understanding. The family requests at this time, in lieu of flowers, please donate to Heart Hospice of Odessa, Texas at www.htohfoundation.org. That's www.htohfoundation.org. Death notices. Inez Marisol Dominguez Arredondo, Odessa. Inez Marisol Dominguez Arredondo, Arredondo, 45, of Odessa, died Tuesday, March 31st, 2020, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. on Friday, April 3rd, 2020, at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery in Odessa 2 section. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Donna Jean Diaz, Odessa. Donna Jean Diaz, 62, of Odessa, died Friday, March 27th, 2020, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled from 3 to 8 p.m., April 7th, 2020, at La Paz Purchase Funeral Homes. Visitors will be limited. Arrangements are by La Paz Purchase Funeral Homes of Odessa. Brand name or generic? Dear Dr. Roach, I read that with certain medications, you should never take the generic medicine over the non-generic. I read this for Synthroid and Levothyroxine, as the range for healthy varies greatly. Is this true? I have heard this true about heart drugs also. K.A. Answer. Many physicians insist on brand name Synthroid. However, generic levothyroxine is effective at treating thyroid issues. I treat my own patients with either, depending on their preference. A 2017 study showed that brand name Synthroid was about 1.7% better than a generic at keeping patients in the desirable range of thyroid hormone. The clinical value of this is marginal. However, patients who are taking levothyroxine should use the same generic manufacturer, and if they must switch, should have a thyroid blood test afterward to make sure the dose is still appropriate. Your pharmacist can tell you your manufacturer and can try to order the same one consistently. Other medications, such as some for heart problems and seizures, also have a narrow range of effectiveness. Too little and the drug is ineffective, too much and it is toxic. Some physicians prefer brand names, but the Food and Drug Administration requires that both brand name and generic drugs meet the same standards for exact doing and purity. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, April 2nd, 2020, etc. Closeness to mother puts distance. Dear Abby, my boyfriend is 31 and still goes to his mother's house and spends the night, even though we live less than 15 minutes away. He knows it upsets me, yet every time she asks him to spend the night, he goes. He left our children home alone while I worked overnight because it was her birthday. His relationship with his mother is a large part of why we aren't married, and the fact that he continues to spend the night there is leading to huge fights. Is this normal or not? Fed Up in Ohio. Dear Fed Up, that your boyfriend would leave minor children alone and without supervision while he spends the night with his mother, birthday or not, is unusual. It would have been more logical for him to have invited his mother to your house to celebrate the occasion. That said, you cannot control what your boyfriend does. I suspect there's a lot more wrong with your relationship than the fact that he hasn't emotionally separated from his mother. You two could benefit from couples counseling to sort out not only his relationship with his mother, but also your relationship with each other. If he won't go, go alone to get clarity on how to proceed with your future. Dear Abby, I have a good friend who has a frustratingly bad habit. Every year, she makes a point of mentioning her upcoming birthday at least a couple of times a week, starting about 4 months before the day. It is never mentioned the rest of the year. If I want to buy someone a birthday gift, I make the effort to find out when their special day is and act accordingly. If I don't wish to provide a gift, then no amount of nagging will guilt me into it. I do not want to end the friendship because she is an otherwise nice person and a good friend, but I'm sick of the nagging. Any suggestions on how to tactfully but effectively deal with this? Nagged in Florida. They're nagged. The next time your friend starts up, respond by saying, "You have already told me." When she does it for the third time, say, "You know, this is getting old. It looks like you are soliciting a gift." Dear Nagged, the next time your friend starts up, respond by saying, "You have already told me." When she does it for the third time, say, "You know, this is getting old. It looks like you are soliciting a gift." Then tell her if she keeps it up, you won't buy her one. I'll bet it works. Dear Abby, sometimes when my boyfriend and I go out with another couple and I'm talking, he abruptly says, "I never get a word in," or "Can anyone else talk?" Abby, if I don't talk, he just sits there like a lump on a log. It's embarrassing, and I have asked him not to say that in front of other people. How should I respond when he makes cruel remarks in front of other people? Awkward silence in New York. Dear Awkward, is what your boyfriend says true, or is it that he has trouble making social conversation? If that's the case, perhaps you should make more of an effort to draw the lump into the conversation. However, if it's not true, then what he's doing may be an effort to appear to be the dominant partner in your relationship. When it happens again, and I'm betting it will, your response should be, "Ouch! That was hurtful and embarrassing. If you have a complaint about my behavior, please be considerate and make it privately." Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren. Write Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Jacqueline Bigger's Stars. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Aries and a moon in Cancer until 1:26 p.m. when the moon enters Leo. Happy birthday for Thursday, April 2, 2020. You are an especially strong-willed individual, and this year you meet challenges head-on. You attract the attention of powerful higher-ups and receive help concerning a startup. You are concerned about a loved one's health and help out. If single, a change of heart is inevitable, so give yourself plenty of chances. If attached, you become more comfortable with your sweetie than ever. There is much merrymaking and joy. Leo loves to show you off. Aries, March 21 through April 19, 4 stars. The first half of the day finds you wanting to be at home with family. The second half, you become more gregarious and begin brainstorming with work colleagues. You have brilliant ideas and receive much praise. Tonight, have a fun night out with loved ones. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 3 stars. A sibling or neighbor is a concern. Today is a good day for writing and speaking, so address your worry with a succinct email. It will work wonders. You feel restless sitting in your workspace, so take a short trip. Tonight, date night. Gemini, May 21 through June 20, 4 stars. You wake up thinking about money and accounts. The afternoon finds you in your element and chatting with lots of people. Plan a social gathering where you can shine. Friends demand your attention and you happily oblige. Tonight, take time out for children. Cancer, June 21 through July 22, 5 stars. You hit your stride early morning and get a lot accomplished. You notice colleagues listening especially closely to what you have to say. You start to think of new ways to make more money. A purchase might be in order. Tonight, answer emails first. Leo, July 23 through August 22, 4 stars. You wake up tired but gather steam as the day grows. Then you are especially energized and excited, and your appearance and personality shine. You are recharged, and relations with the opposite sex go well. Tonight, make plans to attend an important party. Virgo, August 23 through September 22, 3 stars. It's a good day to make a donation to a worthy cause. Think carefully before you act. There's a tendency this afternoon to undo all the positive actions you've taken. It's best to work behind the scenes rather than confront a suspected enemy. Tonight, early bedtime. Libra, September 23 through October 22, 4 stars. Yesterday's energy flows into today. Clear your desk for tomorrow's new cycle. Things go more smoothly. You get your message across and everything works better, including computers and other electronic equipment. Tonight, try something new with your sweetie or loved ones. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21, 3 stars. You don't feel like being at work today, but your ambitions kick in as the afternoon progresses. You strongly want to ask for a promotion. talk with a higher-up who will help. Romance moves to the back burner. Tonight, write down your goals. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21, 4 stars. Tear down the old in order to rebuild. New opportunities come your way that could involve a partner. Everything is enhanced, including your psychic abilities. In a personal relationship, it is the beginning or end of something. Tonight, plan an explorative trip. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19, 5 stars. You wake up thinking keenly of relationships. Good fortune comes your way today. Confusion and delays related to shared resources start to recede into the past, and you can think of beginning a new cycle you are excited to make. Tonight, refresh yourself with journaling. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18, 3 stars. Control your impulses today. Take care of your obligations. Don't get sloppy. Emphasize quality. You're building a creative base for your future. Hard work is required. Be methodical and thorough. It's not a good day for pursuing romance. Tonight, catch up with an elderly relative. Pisces, February 19 through March 20, 3 stars. You feel especially compassionate today. Strive for universal appeal. You're up to the challenge. You tend to think a lot about whatever you're involved in, but keep your resolutions about exercise and watch your diet. Tonight, get out and enjoy the spring air. Born today, author Hans Christian Andersen, 1805, actor Sir Alec Guinness, 1914, singer Marvin Gaye, 1939.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.